You are listening to Dateline Washington on the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus. Thanks for being with us. My next guest in this edition is David Gardenstein Ross, Vice President for Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies here in Washington. We've asked him to join us to explain what the lessons ought to be following last week's extended terrorism attacks committed by Islamic extremists in Mumbai, India. And David, thanks so much for being with us.
It's always good to join you.
So is this type of tactic that we saw, multiple sites, hostage taking, basically gunning people down, is that this type of orchestration unique? How surprised should we be that this happened and where it happened?
It's unique in a modern city that's not in a combat zone. We've seen attacks similar to this one take place in a couple of battlefronts. We've seen it with Al-Qaeda in Iraq taking place inside of Iraq. We've also seen the FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, carry out attacks inside battlegrounds in Colombia that meet an urban warfare model. But for Islamic terrorists acting in a city that's at peace, yes, this is a new model. And it's one that, by any metric, was stunningly successful. I've actually been a little bit disappointed in some of the Western commentary on these attacks, because one of the key things that people need to understand is that the Mumbai attacks have far and away been the most successful attacks that we've seen terrorists engage in since 9/11. It's not even comparable. And part of that is because of the model that they chose to employ. A suicide bombing or a car bombing, any kind of bombing, it occurs and minutes later or hours later at most, it's done. Sometimes there will be a follow-on attack, like a sucker punch device meant to target first responders, but generally it happens and it's over. Here, it took more than 60 hours for them to clear up this this mess. That's almost 2.5 days, during which most of the city was shut down. It had a tremendous effect on India's financial capital, and we'd be foolish to think that the urban warfare model won't be employed by terrorists in the future.
Why was that model so successful?
The reason it was successful is because the terrorists stayed alive. You didn't just have a terrorist set off a bomb and die. Instead, they managed to go into hotels, take hostages, the Jewish center, of course, and carry out bombings elsewhere. Now, I think there's a few things that we can look at for their success. First of all, that they were heavily armed and were able to overwhelm the customs officers who stopped them. Remember, their boats were stopped by customs officers. The customs officers expected them to be, say, drug traffickers. They didn't expect to meet this contingent of heavily armed fighters, which ultimately overwhelmed the meager maritime security that the Indians had in place. The second thing is almost immediately after they came ashore, their first target was the counterterrorism/police headquarters in Mumbai. Their goal was to throw the police response into a shambles. Now, I don't think that the attackers who engaged in the attack on the counterterrorism headquarters expected to survive it. There's at least some evidence suggesting that they didn't expect to do so, but they succeeded. They took out the police response. Now, obviously, police and commandos did respond, but this very first strike managed to slow the Indian responses in a critical way. A third thing is that they'd apparently scoped out the hotels ahead of time. There were some attackers who didn't come ashore by boat, but apparently had been staying in Mumbai, staying in the hotel under false names, claiming to be Malaysian students. And they knew the hotel very well, including the areas that aren't immediately accessible by guests. So there was advanced planning. All of this, coupled with apparent competence on the part of the terrorists, which can perhaps be attributed to the training that they undertook at Lashkar-e-Taiba camps, all of that points to the keys for success for this operation.
A couple of follow-ups here, David. First of all, you mentioned the group. What is their overall aim, and what do we know about other work that they've done?
We don't know much about them. Like I said, they appear to have trained at a Lashkar-e-Taiba camp. These attackers themselves, well, the one that has been captured has said that he is a part of Lashkar-e-Taiba and suggested that other members are as well. But Lashkar-e-Taiba at the top levels has denied a connection to this attack. One group that immediately people focused in on is called the Indian Mujahideen. a group that has carried out attacks in India before, but also one that for all the attacks it's carried out, Indian authorities know shockingly little about that organization. They don't know, for example, whether the Indian Mujahideen is a front group for others or whether it's an independently existing organization. They don't know how big it is. They don't know who the leaders are. They don't know where the leadership is located. There's a lot of substantial question marks. That, coupled with the fact that neither Indian nor American nor British intel knew that these attacks were coming, really creates a question mark about the capabilities of these vital intelligence agencies.
What do we learn about the right way and wrong way to respond to this type of terrorism strategy?
That's a good question, and one that I think we're best not to speculate on at the moment. You've had some talk of this in the Indian press. Obviously, there's an Indian minister who came under fire by suggesting that the Indian police response was inadequate. But a lot of times you'll find that first reports that occur after a terrorist strike are inaccurate. That certainly was the case in these attacks, and it's been the case throughout. Likewise, initial assessments of whether the Indian police did an adequate job or where they failed are often not accurate when the dust has settled. So that's one area where I'm content to let the dust settle before pronouncing my verdict.
And David, of course, one of the other things that we know exists in that region, it was just about a decade ago that we seemed to be on a brink of a war between India and Pakistan for very different reasons. But as far as a Pakistani link to at least some of the people involved, if not the reason for doing these attacks, how do we try to ratchet down any sort of diplomatic tension between the two?
Well, it's critical to do so. And part of that comes through, encouraging contact between Indian political leadership and Pakistani political leaders. We know for a fact that Asif Ali Zardari, the president of Pakistan, did not give the order for this attack to occur. We are equally confident, and when I say we, I mean the United States government, is equally confident that General Kiani, who heads up the Pakistani military, did not order this attack to occur. Now, there may be rogue elements within Pakistani intelligence or the military that are involved in it. That certainly is a problem in Pakistan, the existence of rogue elements. But it's important in this case that the tensions between India and Pakistan not get out of hand. If India undermines the civilian government in Pakistan, it's undermining one of the few friends that it has in Pakistan. And when I say friend, that's relatively speaking. Overall, there's very little love lost between any Indian and Pakistani politicians. Now, a second thing, though, that's important from the sense of U.S. Strategic interest is that right now Pakistan is engaged in counterinsurgency operations in a couple of vital regions. In both Peshawar and Swat, it's been going after Islamic militants, the kind who have been attacking supply lines through Pakistan and who've been conducting cross-border raids into Afghanistan. Now, if the Pakistani military is called away from these counterinsurgency operations and instead is called out to the Indian border, something which incidentally did occur after the last major attack on India that is anywhere comparable in magnitude, that being the December 2001 attacks on the Indian Parliament. When the Pakistani military got called away, that disrupted internal operations. Likewise, we want to be careful about having internal operations that are occurring in Pakistan being disrupted by this attack.
So much to process in the wake of all this. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
David Gardenstein-Ross, Vice President for Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. This is Dateline Washington.